There's four things I want to talk with you about. You were on episode 19.
Yeah.
Last time. So that's 80 episodes ago. So I want to talk to you about going to 168 services.
Yeah.
And then what you've learned in that experiment and how you're trimming that down, pruning it.
Yeah.
And then your Roku experience.
Sweet.
And other boxes that you're running on, just a quick overview on that. Extensions, how extensions tie into all this.
Totally.
Because there might be some people that want to start extensions. And then your book thing.
Sweet.
How all that ties in.
Thank you.
This is the Social Media Church Podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. You're listening to episode number 98. Welcome to another episode of the Social Media Church. I'm DJ Chuang, and whether you're a first-time listener or a long-time subscriber, thank you for tuning in to another episode. And you can always connect with us here at Social Media Church Podcast online, on the internet at socialmediachurch.net. Before we get to the featured conversation, I want to read an email that came in recently from a listener. He is Justin Emmanuel, the Director of Media and Facilities at Crossroads Church in Staten Island. And that would be New York State, for those of you that are not familiar with the geography there. And Justin writes, "Hi, DJ. Just wanted to say thank you for the work you've done and continue to do with Social Media Church. I came across an interview you did with Jay Cranda on YouTube a couple weeks ago while researching how to improve my church's online outlets. After that video, it sent me on a path of other church goodies, including OnlineChurchLeaders.com. With listening to the SMC podcast, as well as the videos on Online Church Leaders, the information and knowledge from yourself and those involved in the conversations have been a masterclass in church web and social media presence. It has been very encouraging and awesome learning from you and other brothers and sisters in Christ. And I want to encourage you to keep going, as you have made a huge impact on myself and influence for the much, much better, the vision and direction I'm going to take with my church's online outlets. Thank you again, and God bless. Justin Emmanuel." Well, that was so heartwarming. And Justin, thank you for the email. Thank you for the permission for me to share it with my listeners here. And you, as the community of Social Media Church leaders and listeners, this is your community. And I'm here to facilitate that conversation. And this email is a perfect example of what we love to see happen because of the conversations that we are sharing here at Social Media Church. And just as Justin mentioned Jay Cranda and how helpful he was, and since I live in Orange County, California, and I happen to also attend Saddleback Church at one of its many locations around Orange County and even in four locations around the world, I got in touch with Jay Cranda and sat down with him face-to-face in person at his office recently, and we had this conversation that we want to share with you. So literally, you are listening in to our conversation as we talk about the online church campus that they have at Saddleback, how they're running 167 online worship services every week, what they're thinking about in terms of adjusting that for a better user experience and deeper engagement, as well as how that rolls out from online to offline in what they call extensions. And then we'll also mention Jay Cranda's book. Jay Cranda has a lot to share, so I am going to share with you the entire conversation without any edits. So let's go now and listen in to my conversation with Jay Cranda, the online campus pastor of Saddleback Church.
All right, I'm sitting here with Jay Cranda on the Social Media Church podcast. Jay is the online campus pastor at Saddleback Church, based here in Lake Forest, California, and 13 other locations around the country and around the world.
Is it 13? I can't even keep
13.
Up.
I went to the social media team meeting last week here at Saddleback, and the official count was 13.
I like it. I feel like I never...
And the number is always changing.
Yeah, totally.
It's just like things are in your online church world is always changing. Yeah. So we're going to take a snapshot here. We had Jay on our podcast back at episode 19, so I'll add a link in the show notes for that. But since that time, which is over a year and a half ago, I'm sure a lot of things have happened, including how your online church has gone to 167 services a week. That's every hour on the hour except for Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. That's probably when you switch out the tapes or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have to allow some processing time in order to get up and going.
Okay. So tell our listeners what you've learned in 80 episodes as social media. No. share with our listeners what you've learned in running a worship service every hour on the hour for thousands of people around the world.
Well, I will say that every hour number of services is a lot of fun, and it creates a lot of momentum because numerically you just have something always going. So the problem is that we have overlapping experiences.
Yeah, because your services are not an hour. Yeah. They actually go over.
Yeah. Our services can be anywhere from an hour and 20 minutes to up to an hour and 50 minutes long. And so what happens is we were forced to position our chat experience to not be real time at non-live tower live times, but to be kind of a discussion wall. And so we have, you know, let's say, what is that? I can't even keep up to date. 6 live experiences at our Lake Forest campus that get broadcast on our online campus. Well, those live times are really when the collective masses are gathering to really make a chat room significant. We see enough people. Our rebroadcast times every hour, there's a lot of people. You know, there might be 100 people or 200 to 300 people gathering at a time. But percentage-wise, you might get 1% of a total amount engaging on a chat wall. So the smaller those rebroadcast times get, let's say on a Tuesday, Wednesday, you get down to 30 people a service or 10, you start going, okay, no one's going to engage on the chat wall. And so you don't want a dead experience. And so what happened internally is that we just started to talk about, okay, well, what does the chat offer? And then we started to position it more as a discussion wall since we have overlapping experiences. So you might come on at 4 o'clock, start something. Now someone comes at 5, they start something from the beginning. Now you got overlapping experiences.
But it's the same chat room.
It's the same chat room.
So if they try to discuss a point, they're like, what are you talking about? Yeah. So you're spoiling the sermon.
Exactly. Spoilers for, you know, Doctor Who fans. Spoiler, no spoilers. And so we started to position more discussion wall. And I actually stopped really building, robustly building into the chat host role. And I started to build more into like the response team around it. So like, hey, let's have some more live prayer. Let's make sure people can answer prayer requests and questions more through kind of our automation process. And so in moving away from the chat host role, it's because we've just found that we have too many experiences either to fill every spot and really to provide the best experience. And so we've learned that, honestly, the thing that I've learned the most is that I feel like the rebroadcast is just not good enough for us. We've kind of moved away from that because there's not enough people watching it. I'll say this. We have a lot of people watching it, but our dilemma is always here at Saddleback is that we take a live experience and put it up as an online experience.
Yes.
So the only way we really contextualize that for the online viewer is we have an intro and an outro. And really those pieces are just me during the week. I shoot something or somebody else that I've asked to be a host. And it's something as simple as, hey, thanks for watching online. I'm so glad you're part of our online community. And I contextualize the experience. And then we throw to the live service. And then there's an outro at the end that, again, is like, hey, Rick talked about this. You need to get into a small group. You can do that online. And those intros and outros are kind of like the most essential component to just contextualizing it. And with a rebroadcast service, when it starts on the hour, what we're saying is there's only a 30, 40 second window. You have to come a little bit early. You have to click play.
Oh.
You have to see the service. And then you're going to see my intro and then you're going to go to the service because that's the most important element to the online viewer, to let them know that we care about them watching online. But with a rebroadcast, we have found that that isn't utilized well. We don't really get to speak to the online viewer. They get a live experience, which is great and high quality. It's our pastor. It's amazing. But sometimes especially in a service, the time-sensitiveness of getting to something online on time, it's not the same thing.
Well, when you have it every hour on the hour, it's
yeah, he's like, oh, who cares? I'll wait until the next or whatever. Uh-huh. And so we are actually trying to move away from rebroadcast and moving to having... Right now we have live, we have rebroadcast, or as we call mm-hmm. it, simulated live. Mm-hmm. And then we have on demand. We're actually trying to move to just live and on demand only. And okay. so that will mean the reason why I want to move towards on demand is because I think it makes sense with, obviously, with online viewing habits. It just culturally, mm-hmm. that's what we do. We want something mm-hmm. on demand. Additionally, it makes it so that no matter what time you land on our site, you get the full experience. You get the welcome. You get the full music, you get the video, you get the outro, you get everything whenever
you
want.
Without the pressure of having to be on time.
Yeah, to not, and then yeah. and then also with
when you're there, you're on time.
Yeah,
there
you're on time. Yeah. And also with on demand is so much simpler on the technology side of things. Mm-hmm. It's just, mm-hmm. it's now the only dilemma with on demand is that the music rights are a little different. So, you know, live and really rebroadcast is kind mm-hmm. of a murky area.
Does Saddleback write their own music? Because that's one way to get around
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, there's one way, but we don't. You know, we okay. we do everything. We, yeah. We'll do Oceans or something.
Yes, that's
song,
a very but... popular in the...
Yeah, yeah. So
it's on the hot rotation. Yeah. We've seen it almost every week, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, yeah. It's used a lot, but, you know, with On Demand, it's they see it as, like, they can come anytime to watch it, so you might have to own it. So you have to walk through that. So that's kind of a gray area. But I like On Demand a lot more just because I feel like it makes sense. Mm. You move away from a mm-hmm. chat experience, but you move into a more personalized response place. Mm-hmm. So the on-demand service will sit on our page. Mm-hmm. You get the full thing, and you get the full response elements centered around that. So somebody can still come to Christ. Somebody can still connect their life, mm-hmm. Get connected into a small group, whatever the else it is. But because our online experience is kind of the first gateway, really we want them to get into a small group. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where we believe things get flushed out and make sense, everything in reality. And so really the online experience is one step towards where we want them to go. And so ultimately the on-demand, we believe, can help get people into that next step a lot easier because they're not having to, you know, if they miss the first 5 minutes or they mm-hmm. miss our outro and let them know, hey, we do have online groups. Hey, you can connect. It doesn't matter if you live 100 miles away or 1,000. You can yes. still be part of it. And our intros and outros do that. So yeah. short story is that we've learned that rebroadcast is great. It's exciting, but we're moving way more to on-demand.
Before we... Before we talk a bit more about the on-demand, did you notice some, in terms of numbers, viewership, was it very U.S.-centric or was it a fairly consistent number of viewers all throughout your rebroadcast schedule 24 hours a day?
Well, I'll say, like, if you give a week, yeah. right at the current moment, because we have 6 live services.
Right. And then the live ones do have the peaks.
Yeah, live ones have the peaks.
How about the rest of them?
And then we have 161 rebroadcast services mm-hmm. technically under that right. model. So if you look at our numbers, we probably have 30% live, probably 50% rebroadcast, mm. and then the remaining 20% would be on demand, which our on demand on our site right now is only the message. It's what the message gets archived. Yes. It isn't the full experience.
Okay.
So the reason...
Oh, okay. So the difference with your on-demand currently with the library versus what you're building out is the full worship experience,
yeah, exactly.
right? Just the sermon.
Yeah, yeah. We want to leverage the entire
And then
experience.
You want to add the obvious next steps so that people respond.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, viewing habits, it's interesting because, you know, when you have a great week, I always know Saturday, I know where we should be at on a Saturday. You know, like on a good week, we might be at... you know, 600 or something, 30-minute watchers. You know, we track our 30.
You have a very stringent
we have a
metric.
Very, yeah. So, we track two numbers, mainly our unique visitors or users, as Google Analytics is calling it most recently. And then we have our 30-minute where we actually ping their server every 5 minutes. And after so many pings, we count them as one. And so... really, we care the most about our.
So, if someone watches 29 minutes, it doesn't really.
It doesn't count. It doesn't count. So,
stay that extra minute.
Yeah, stay the extra minute. We have a conversion rate of about 60%. So it's pretty high.
Yes.
And I look. My dashboard has it. We do the conversion every week. I'm aware of what our because like we grow two ways, throwing more users in and having more outreach. kind of, if it's word of mouth or tools or whatever, and then really making the page a little bit stickier and more interactive so people stay longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I know on a Saturday how things go, and what Rebroadcast does is, at least what we've learned in the last year, adding a service every hour, it obviously gives more people to watch it, but it's just the multiplication's crazy. So if you have, let's say, 24 services in an hour, and you get, if you have a great weekend, like we've had it, like during Easter, we had, this past Easter, we had like near 70,000 users on our site. You know, over 30, it was like 35 or 36,000 watching 30 minutes or more. It was nutty. And that didn't even count Roku. What happened was, is that we had a huge weekend. We were at like 29,000 or 30,000 visitors on a weekend. But Monday, what happened was, when people started talking about it, most likely people started to rewatch it. They were sharing it. And what happens is that every service now, if you have 130 people a service, or 200 or 300 people a service, 300 times 24, I just knew it. It was like momentum. You look at it.
Yes.
So rebroadcast services, if you're not doing rebroadcast services, I don't know why you wouldn't, because you already have the... It's all automated. Yeah. It's another way. I know what they think is, well, I don't have a chat host there. Well, I think most people, what I've learned from our habits is that most people are watching in community. I mean, at least, you know, we found, and I was talking to you about...
And you're not checking the gate, like, how many people are watching.
Yeah, we're not checking. Yeah. We do a survey every once in a while. And we had a... We did a survey a while back out of 500 people, which is not the large majority of our audience.
But statistically significant.
So, okay. I like it. I trust you. You're the expert in that area. Out of 500 people, it was that 40% were watching with somebody else.
How about that?
So the other thing I know is that whenever we do like what's the technical term? You can do like screenshots of like
heat
maps. There you go. We did this. This was like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
We did this first time. There was
That's ancient. 4 years.
Well, yeah, I know. But we've done it since then again. But I remember we were doing this investigation why this one area was red hot. And it was like nutty. It was like the hottest it could be. Well, we realized that on when you hover over the video player, it's actually our full screen mode.
Yes.
So we didn't realize that because you had to hover to see it. But what we know is that you're 40% are watching other people, and one of the most clicked buttons is full screen mode.
There you go. Huh.
So like...
So the chat...
So it's like... Yeah, the chat...
Hitting a very small slice
of people. I think it does all...
Although that
it does communicate
still
what
matters.
It does matter, and I think people are going to use it for a variety of ways.
Sure.
We're actually trying to build more ways for private chat experiences. So like, we have online groups, so your online group can watch a service and have your own private chat room. That would probably make more sense. I think the hard part when you have a collective, it's like you're trying to mimic a patio experience, but the patio experience is great, and the patio experience is on purpose, and you have response areas. But this is what happens, even at local churches, I don't care where you're at. The patio experiences get new people connected. Everyone else is most likely serving, or they're already at lunch with their friends.
Yes, right.
So the chat room for us works the same way, is that I want people to be there always to connect somebody or whatever. But you can do that through automation. You can do that through some other systems. But I usually tell, try to do rebroadcast. Just do it leverage. You can get... I don't want to come off as a number guy, but you can add more people. More people represents more souls, more ways for more people to get connected. And
we
think,
count people because people count.
Exactly.
I heard someone say that.
And ultimately, we have found that our live times work best for local, but our rebroadcast times work best for the rest of the United States and the U.S. So
amazing.
So if I look at a Google Analytics, table, data on a Saturday or Sunday or an afternoon, I might go, oh wow, there's 45% are local, but by the end of the week, we're down to 30% local or even under 30%. And then we're around 20% international.
There you go.
And then like 50% or so are the rest of the United States. And so what happens is you grow and then you lose that local because it just provides more ways.
Now how are you going to roll that out when you go from 168 to on demand? Is there going to be a big party press conference?
No.
Is there a date?
Our date right now, and it's a hard day, but anything can happen. We're going to have a soft launch the week before, but our hard date right now is September 13th.
Okay.
That's when...
The new school year?
Yes.
Okay.
And so my kids are young, so I don't have to deal with school years yet. But essentially, September 13th is when that changes. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an internal conversation. There won't be too much external around that. No, not too much around that. But essentially, we're going to roll out to our volunteers. We're going to roll out to our small groups. And it's going to be communicated through email internally. Here's how it's going to work. I also have to reorg and move around some chat hosts.
So some of our listeners want to be on the beta team there. Could they contact you?
Yeah, they could totally contact me. Yeah.
Because I'd love to have some feedback. I don't have a lot.
Yeah.
I have more feedback from spammers than I do real people. But I think we can turn that around right here.
They could totally be part of it. Just send me an email at
online@salaback.com. Oh, sorry. I just talked over you. So can you repeat that?
Oh, it's online@salaback.com.
We'll add a link in the show notes and you can join the beta team for the new on-demand online worship experience at Saddleback Church. Now, you're already kind of doing that through some of the other video channels like Roku and some other things. What else? What have you learned in adapting your content onto these alternative video channels?
Well,
which ones do you have? And then what's unique about your
channel? Currently, the one that's, you know, we leverage the most is Roku. You know, you can watch our services. Like, we're aware of how our page interacts on a PlayStation browser, on an Xbox browser. You could do those things on those browsers. It's not, you know, optimized for their experience. Mm-hmm. But mainly Roku is the main one that we're very much aware of. And, you know, we got on Roku because it was the most used TV connected device, the most bought, the most used. It was beating Apple TV, all those, and it was the cheapest for us to get on. You know, tons of churches have been on it prior to us, obviously. Okay. There's a big market on there. Mm-hmm. It cost us, I think we spent more probably than the average, but I know you can get it for as cheap as, you know, $5,000, but I think we spent $10,000, to have some more quality to it. Mm-hmm. And plus, because of some of the way our live technology works, and because it's a little bit more custom, it takes a little bit more. Plus, we have a 30-minute number we have to track, which we had to custom build to do that. That data line is really important to us. Mm-hmm. So right now we have about 1,700 people every week that watch 30 minutes or more on Roku.
How about that?
So a large amount of people. Mm-hmm. The great thing about Roku, too, is that because it's connected to a user account, you get full data.
Oh.
So that's something I did not know. I logged into our Roku account the first week, and I can see, like, the gender, the age. I can see, like,
location.
I can see data.
Frequency.
Yeah, I mean, like, stuff that you can't get on a general page unless it's linked to a user account.
A login.
But because it's linked to their Roku user account, you get full data, which is nuts. Mm-hmm. It's so useful. And I know, like, you know, we've looked at doing something like an Adobe data, stuff like that, but, like, the price tag is ridiculous. It's like they were saying, like, $150,000 a year. We're like, we can't. You're talking about our budget, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And so, that's really great to have that access to that data. But, you know, for us, the reason why we started talking about those things is because we have these home groups, we have these extensions where people are gathering all around the country and the world and are watching together. And we wanted to provide really a foolproof experience. And what we've learned with Roku is Roku doesn't go down. You know, Roku goes down if there's really an issue with our stream. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, if we have if someone's having a user error, it's usually because their browser's not updated, because their operating system's not updated. But with Roku, because it's fully enclosed, the odds are...
Yeah, you just push the video up and it's on demand, right?
So and most of the time, our stream doesn't go down because it's our stream. It's because there's a user thing. Now, we have streaming issues every once in a while, but there's a lot of factors. The multiplication of how something can go down on Roku is a lot lower. There's a lot less variables. So what I've found is that if a user really has a big issue, I would almost want to ship them a Roku device to kind of like, okay, you're having that much of a problem? Well, here, we'll spend, you know, $40 on a Roku, the streaming stick, whatever, and look, you won't have any more problems. And so the visual of having everybody watch together is very powerful. And that's where part of the benefit of us having our new website that we've had here for a while now mm-hmm. is that everything, because our page is responsive and all those things, they can take notes like normal. They can click on the response buttons like normal. And so mm-hmm. really thinking of that second screen experience is really what we have to. Really, the reality is we're trying to think more, how do you design with the full screen and the full screen mode
in mind,
in play, really? Yeah. Do you have to go more second screen? Do you have to do this everything? And luckily, there's so many people doing that, so many TV shows and stuff that we can learn from. And so the problem is it costs so much. So it's
to do the second screen experience, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, good. I mean, well, mm-hmm. really, that we're, you know, a lot of times these shows are doing, like, if it's like, I know, like, AMC spends so much money between, like, Walking Dead and Mad Men and all their shows on their second screen experiences. But you always wonder, is that a gimmick? Is it more a marketing ploy? Or is it, like, really useful? And that's, I don't know if I was talking to you about this or somebody else, but, like Conan O'Brien did something mm-hmm. where he had an app that you would download. It was a second screen experience, but what it would do is that it would audio sync with where you were at in the show with the experience.
How about that?
So yeah. Thinking about on demand or rebroadcast, sure. You could link. So let's say if you had something to share.
Time code of some kind.
Yeah, so it was time coded in such a way that you could have the same experience replicated. The hard part with us is that since we have a live experience and we don't always know what is the topic of the weekend, it's hard to build an experience around that. So that's always going to be our dynamic. But, you know, it works for us. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. We're always trying to figure out new ways. But Roku, I think, is... I think that's just the more where things are going. You know, if I watch a service from home, I use my browser on my Samsung TV, and it actually works clean. We've also started the process of trying to build out on other devices like PlayStation.
Yeah.
A month ago, I submitted an application to build on PlayStation. The problem is a lot of those channels they're not super favorable with religious
okay.
entities, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call them. So
yes.
I haven't heard back from PlayStation okay. yet, but mm-hmm. we jumped through the hoops somewhere.
Chromecast, is that in play? I have one of those sticks.
Yeah, we actually use Chromecast to hear internally for different things. I don't know. I mean, it's hard. Even myself, like, I don't really use the apps too much. I just cast my service page. I don't even know. I don't know. Like, it's the same thing with, like, Amazon Fire and
Kindle
stuff.
Fire, yeah.
Yeah, it's just we haven't seen the collective masses yet to make it, you know. The good thing is that we got on Roku for fairly cheap for us, and the idea was to be on that for a year and start determining, okay, did we get enough users out of that?
Mm-hmm.
Did it make sense? Can we get people connected easily through mm-hmm. those things? We've tried to lean towards more on gaming platforms because of the generational mm-hmm. ages mm-hmm. of those users.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for example, Netflix is most heavily used on PlayStation.
Oh, fascinating.
So
okay.
TV-wise, content-wise, yeah. probably dealing more in our length of content.
Yes.
You know, they're using yes. PlayStation.
Uh-huh,
it might be most worth... Now, yeah. it's going to cost us more.
Right.
It could be worth more for us to get on that instead of getting on Amazon
yeah.
Fire, Chromecast, and Samsung apps because of the demographic.
Now,
we've got to learn.
In addition to your online worship experiences, that's just a first step of several. And a lot of people I hear come to you to ask about your online small groups
mm-hmm.
and extensions. So talk to each of those.
Yeah. Well, obviously with Saddleback, we're so big on small groups. That's just obviously a staple of who we are. And so, I've always been part of a church. I got saved at a church when I was transitioning from middle school to high school. And it was a purpose-driven church. You know, we did the simulcast back in the day.
Yeah.
And I, like, sat on a Saturday morning watching, you know, a purpose-driven simulcast of some sort. So
right.
I was part of that network when I was a teenager. And so we did small groups here. I'm very familiar with that model. So if you talk to me about anything about getting people connected, I'm going to think, okay, what's your funnel? I'm going to think community to core mm-hmm. and then with commission. I always think that way because that's the churches I've been part of. And so with online, I just did the same thing that was natural. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, you go from watching online weekly to becoming a member to get into a small group, and then you start influencing spiritual health individually. And so with that, what's unique about an online experience is that instead of just having small groups, we have three types. We have online groups where they meet on a private page that's on our servers. It's called My Saddleback. They have a private experience. It's really, experience-wise, it's very similar to a Facebook group, but the main difference is it's linked to a Saddleback account, and it's linked to our small group video material.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the main difference.
Mm.
And they host like a typical group, is that you sign up to host, you meet all at one time, you watch the video material, and the host asks questions in text form, and then we encourage our small groups to use other video resources like Zoom or Skype if they want to go there, or Google Hangouts to go the extra mile. Mm-hmm. What we found is that the video build out is very complex and takes a lot of money and breaks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of like leverage our space for it to be text based,
mm-hmm.
and the video side database wise, and use other tools because it's kind of like, it costs us so much.
Sure.
You know, we used TalkBox.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I've used that.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah. And,
I even have a T-shirt.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Well, I know that we.
They kind of imploded.
They imploded, and they started wanting to charge us tons of money.
Yeah.
And it was like crazy because they're going to charge us per minute of every user.
Ouch.
And it was like, what? That's when Ephraim was running online groups, and I was like, that's nuts. And so it works really good right now, our model. But really what's great about an online group is that it's kind of, it's a catch-all. Is that if I'm talking to somebody, if it's a prayer request, they commit their life to Christ, they want to get whatever it is, I'm always like, okay, I'm praying for you. You're going through this. And then my next question is going to be, hey, are you in community? Are you talking to someone about what's going on in your world? That's, you know, losing your mom is a big deal. Are you mm-hmm. part of a church? Are you in a small group? And if they tell me no, I go, okay, here's a couple options. You can join an online group. We got groups happening, you know, in every time zone. You can start a group in your home or start a group online, and mm-hmm. I kind of can give them. And so online groups allow it. Really, nobody has an excuse. Mm-hmm. If someone says, like, well, there's no groups in my area, which is could be true,
mm-hmm.
I can go, well, there's groups online. And they and I can go, I know it's, you may not know what that means. It may be foreign, but you need to be in community. It might be the first step. And so our online groups are really, you know, we have over 500 of these online groups.
Mm-hmm.
And they happen at all different time zones, different languages. It's amazing. And but we don't just have that. We also have home groups. And our home groups are small groups that are non-local. And they're meeting in places all around. And our home groups cover 412 different cities. We have one in every state.
Mm-hmm. Now, are these the ones you call extensions?
No.
Okay, so there's a whole other category.
These are just small groups.
On the ground.
Yeah, on the ground. Yep. Yeah, pretty much. Not in the cloud.
Not the online.
Yeah. And eight different countries. I mean, but essentially what they've done is they don't attend a church locally. They want to be part of Saddleback, and they want to be part of a small group. So they watch every week online, and they gather once a week to do a small group.
Great.
So. Okay. And then our last one is this thing called extensions, which is really, it's a small group on steroids. And so what happens is...
So not only do they watch the small group curriculum together, they watch the worship services together.
Exactly.
Ah, see, that makes sense.
Yeah, so they watch the weekend together. We have different categories of extensions.
Mm-hmm.
Really what an extension is doing is an extension is focusing the first 3 to 4 months on being a healthy small group. Healthy core allows to multiply healthy, you know, other groups. And so we say focus on there. And then the following, you know, anywhere from 4 to 8 months or whatever, you're focusing on replicating that group into 2 to 3 to 4 groups. So really the first year, at the end of the first year, your hope is to be at 3 to 4 groups.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is that the first 3 to 4 months, you're focusing on healthy group, and then you're identifying a co-host that can spin off,
mm-hmm.
and then they can bring someone along with them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Ideally, two couples, so if mm-hmm. one, at least somebody else is showing up. And so for sustainability. So the first phase, healthy group, and then it goes into a multiplication group, and then you move into an infrastructure group where the host is meeting with all the other hosts weekly, building in, talking about leading, talking about healthy dynamics in groups, so forth. And then really you get ready to launching an experience, which really is moving to a purpose-driven church strategy. So they would read purpose-driven church. They would do all that. And so this is a new strategy for us. Mm-hmm. We've been doing extensions for a while. We used to do, you launch at a service. Now we've changed where we say launch with a small group. Because what happens is if they launch with a small group and they multiply it, we're able to identify people. Launching with a service, it's a harder dynamic. We ran into things with the city. One city told us, you know, they were meeting in a home, and there was 30 people gathering every week, and they were doing live worship. And the city told, I was talking to the city controller or whatever, and the city was telling me, like, that area is not, you're taking up too many parking spots, you're being too loud on a Sunday, that place is not zoned for a church, it's a residential area. So, like, what we learned was going to, like, we had to set a number at 70, they actually move over to a regional team. That meant that most people can't get to 70 without too much support. So we found is that we need to move to another model, and our small group strategies is the other model. And so the only other thing that's unique about our extensions is that we also have prison extensions. So we have, and what's unique about prison extensions is that they're never really going to launch a full experience. They're not going to probably do small groups. They're not going to have too many serving opportunities. They're not, they're not going to be a traditional purpose-driven church in that sense. We have 8 prison extensions that gather about 600 attendants every week. And they actually don't use our online service. We ship them a DVD every Monday. So our prison extensions are unique, and that's a vision from Rick. He just wanted... He wanted to empower, really, we originally used the Celebrate Recovery Network. And we just said, hey, you know, a lot of the guys that were doing Celebrate Recovery in these prisons, they're already doing CR, and they didn't necessarily have the bandwidth to preach another sermon. So we said, hey, why don't you just become part of the online campus network? And we'll ship you a DVD every week, and because Wi-Fi is an issue in those locations, you can host a service, and it's just plug and play. And, you know, we'll give you some stuff to follow up on that. And you can build off the CR, can be kind of the small groups kind of network and the health stuff. And it was a great idea. It was, it's amazing. And so we have an amazing network of prison extensions. And, you know, our hope is that that's going to grow in the coming year. So,
wow. What an amazing ministry. And you've been in this role how long now?
I've been in this role full time for like 2.5 years.
Okay.
But doing it here at Saddleback, probably 4.5 years.
Okay.
Because I was part time.
Yes.
Doing a couple different things, and so doing it a while. It's a blessing. It's gone.
And now that things are humming along, you're finding some time to work on some side projects. Like I heard about a book that you just released.
Yes. That's a good leeway. I like that. You know.
Hey, I'm coming up on 100 episodes, so I've been at this for a while.
You have. Yeah, you know, outside of my job doing online ministry and ministering and leading the online campus here under just some amazing leadership of my bosses, Dave Alford, who's amazing, Steve Gladen, and obviously Rick, we've learned so much. And outside of that, I write regularly on my site, sharing a couple of our the learnings that we learned from doing church online, since everyone's kind of learning together.
And you've been doing a lot more of that lately, so
yeah,
I appreciate sharing the wisdom.
Yeah, I've been trying to, you know, because I know not everybody gets the bandwidth. You know, most of the time when I'm talking to people that are doing online ministry, it's like their side job that they don't get paid for, you know. There's a handful of us that really get to do it full time. And so I wanted to at least jot down our learnings. And it's funny, you know, I kind of like you, I've been doing writing for a while now, and I go back to old posts and I'm like, oh, that's so funny that that's what I thought, or that's evolved, or, you know, most common, I find spelling errors. On top of that,
they have a technology called Spell Checker.
I know. Well, it doesn't help with tenses.
Okay.
My wife is a teacher. She normally edits my stuff. But on top of all that, I do some consulting for different organizations with their social media strategy. You know, one of my first jobs here at Saddleback was I was on the communications team, and I helped launch our social media ministry. It was in its infancy, like total infancy, and I had a couple people who were on that team were awesome. A couple guys have gone on to do other things, and Haley now has taken over, and Haley's amazing and sharp and taking it to a whole nother level that I wouldn't have been able to take it to. But with that, I got introduced to a couple people, started doing social media, posting management, consulting on strategy, different things. And I started to love that idea. Obviously, it was extra income on top of a church.
And you got young kids there.
Young kids.
They got to be fed.
Well, the funny part, the first time I actually got a contract with somebody, it was because my first son was being born. And I was talking to friends, you know, never had kids before. I was like, and kind of new on, you know, I was fairly new in having a job with that would pay benefits. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I was used to making $12,000 a year being a college student. You know what I mean? In that sense. So I never really had benefits. So like when my son was about to come, and my wife at the time was a full-time teacher, and she transitioned from no longer teaching to us having me working full-time, I was asking friends, like, how much would I expect to, like, you know, pay for the birth and all that? And so I was like, oh, man, that's a lot of money. It was mm-hmm. something like, I think, $2,500 or something. Mm-hmm. And so, and I started to look like, well, maybe I should look for a side job just to maybe pay for that. And one of my first contract was actually literally was, I forget how long it was, but it was for training somebody on how to do social media at this company. Mm-hmm. And it was just enough to cover the birth. It was like something like that. Yeah. It was a total God thing. I was uh-huh. like, oh, that's crazy. You know, it was like a God thing. I was able to pay like right when our son was born. Yeah. I just paid them.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's perfect. And then a couple months later, they came back to me and they wanted to continue. And so it led me into this whole area of consulting with businesses and nonprofits and stuff. And I don't have a lot of it, but I have enough of it for a consistent side business. And this led me to write my book, because a lot of the questions that come up that I was getting when somebody would talk to me, if it's a church online leader, someone doing social media at a church or a business, I don't care. A lot of times what it came down to was, you know, I have these channels, but I don't know how to leverage it. Mm. And I felt like over and over again, what I saw was that they were just posting sporadic things to post, mm-hmm. and there was no centralized vision to accomplish their goals on these channels. Mm. So just like anything, mm-hmm. it was just like, hey, okay, what are your goals? If it's to increase sales on a product or service, or to get people to attend, you want to post in such a way to increase your goal. Like mm-hmm. If you hire someone to do something, you want to make sure that they bring you more money on what you're hiring them to mm-hmm. do. So what I did was I wrote down really what my ebook was. It's really simple.
What's the title of the ebook?
It's Social Media Made Easy for Small Businesses.
Social Media Made Easy for Small Businesses.
I purposely tried to make the title long.
Will it fit in a tweet?
Just barely. It would. I saw you tweet about my longest URL or whatever.
It was a very long URL.
But pretty much what I do is, my idea was, and what I do in the book, in this ebook, I don't want to call it a book because it's only like 33 pages. So really, it's pretty simple and concise. And the idea is that I create you're trained in such a way to create a custom social media plan for your channels. Mm-hmm. So I give you the steps on how to create a custom plan for your business. And it's in 8 steps. I give some education on that and some breakdown of different channels. But essentially, I want you to be able to go, here's how you create your plan. And so the big part is, what are your goals? Okay, you need to tell a narrative over 7 to 14 days. Hmm. You need to post mm-hmm. consistently. You need to select how many times mm-hmm. you're going to post in a week. Mm-hmm. All those things, scheduling tools. Mm-hmm. And you can do this with a very minimal commitment, but you need to take it seriously. And it's just putting on the thinking cap when you approach these channels. I think a lot of people just, you know, they throw it to one person on their team, but there's no vision cast into it. And I think what companies that do social media well, they cast vision into it. And a lot of times that means they cast resources into it. Mm-hmm. And so with this, instead of, you know, the companies I'm working for, you know, usually they have more money to pay me to do it. Not everybody can do that. Mm-hmm. And so the vision was, you know, for $3, here's a kind of a simple breakdown. I also, you know, if people want to get more...
For the price of a latte.
Yeah, exactly.
Since you're a coffee connoisseur.
Yeah, I spent more than that on a latte today. But yeah.
Yeah, some of those lattes do cost more than that.
Yeah. I was sick today. I was sick yesterday and
thanks for making time
this morning.
To talk.
So I was I said, I deserve a latte this morning to wake me up. That's how I justified it in my head. I don't know if you do that. I do that.
No, I don't. I've been cutting back on my caffeine.
That's good. I would die.
And so how's the response been for the book?
It's been good. What I've learned in this process.
Ebook.
Please say ebook. My brother's writing a book right now, and he calls my book like a pamphlet, because his book is like 180 pages long. And mm-hmm. I said, well, you're terrible at finishing things. That's what I tell him. So, which is, he's single and I'm married, so that's what mm-hmm. I tell him all the time anyway. So, yeah. But no, it's been great. It's been a learning. You know, something that I'm terrible at is marketing myself, and so and marketing things I can offer. And so honestly, it's been a great learning curve in that capacity, but it's led into some really cool conversations. And so my hope was just to offer something that I can some of the benefits that I've, conversations I've been able to do, mm-hmm. and the roles that I've been able to do in my short time here. I just wanted to share a couple things. So
great.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds like a handy guide to put a plan together. There's dozens of books out there, not a lot, not hundreds, but dozens of books that give you ideas for social media, or they give you the reason why you should be on social media, but you actually help people make a plan.
Yeah, and that was the whole vision.
That's valuable.
And I also give, if you share my book with your social friends, I give everybody a 99-cent deal. So they can go to jcranda.com/social. It's actually in my Twitter bio if they find me on there.
Well, I'll add it in the show notes.
Yeah, so that's a way. If you, and it's on their accountability. So I just say, if you share it with your friends, you can get my book for 99 cents. So, yeah.
All right. Awesome. Jay Cranda, thanks for being with us on Social Media Church.
That was my conversation with Jay Cranda, the online campus pastor of Saddleback Church. And you'll want to connect with him in the show notes. And he would love to connect with you if you would want to connect with him. And to do that, you can check the show notes at socialmediachurch.net. The web address again is socialmediachurch.net. And you can check out their online campus as well as Jay Cranda's new book about social media for small businesses, which also has very transferable principles for church leaders. And while you're over there at socialmediachurch.net, be sure to subscribe if you have not done so yet on iTunes or Stitcher or any podcatcher app that you use on your smartphone device or even on your desktop. I'd love to hear from you also on any of the social media channels. And you can also email me at socialmediachurch.net. And that's literally me, M-E, at socialmediachurch.net. And as we get listener feedback through all these channels, if more of it comes in, I'll even open up a segment here for listener feedback and listener mail, or whatever we might come up with a name for this other segment in addition to the featured conversation. Keep the good conversations flowing on social media and stay connected here at Social Media Church. My name is DJ Chuang, and until next time, as we approach episode 100, let's stay connected online.
Usually people say thank you, but...